Well, it is my pleasure to be here with you tonight and to share this practice. Before we start, I would like to sort of welcome ourselves into this space and welcome our whole body. I want to do a little bit of a breathing activity that is not part of the mindfulness meditation practice, but is actually conducive to the mindfulness meditation practice. So I want to be clear when we could make a distinction between mindfulness practice and the other things that I will be introducing today and throughout the 6 weeks that might not be exactly mindfulness or mindfulness itself, but will work towards the ecosystem of a mindfulness practice. So this breathing activity is very simple. Take your right hand, place it on your belly. Take your left hand, place it on your chest, and see if you could locate your heartbeat. Breathe normally, breathe naturally. Just take a moment and notice your belly going out on the inhale. In on the exhale. So breathe into your hand, inhale into your hand and feel it expand on the belly. On the exhale, bring it in. On the next one, breathe into both hands so that you could feel the chest expand. Keep going. On the next exhale, see if you could breathe through your mouth. Exhale through your mouth. And make sort of like a hissing sound. Inhale. Go longer with your exhale. Go at your own pace. Go back to your normal breathing and take your hands and just put them wherever it feels relaxed for you. As we come back into sort of the rhythm of the class, a little bit faster than that breath, maybe, we just remind ourselves that we're giving ourselves permission to be here for this hour. And so for this hour, we can hang out with ourselves, hang out with each other, and learn. And that means that whatever is happening outside, whatever is happening inside your mind, inside your thinking, you could say, you know what? It'll be there when I finish this class. It'll be right there and I could pick it up. It's not as if there's something wrong with thinking about any of the things that might be burdening us or worrying us or keeping us from being in this moment. But we say, at this point, I am going to give myself the gift of taking care of myself, of being right here and being right now where I am, just as I am, without pushing anything out, But again, making a bit of space for the possibility of having a wonderful experience. So my name is Carlos Gonzalez. Most of you know me, but I don't know all of you. Only maybe sort of a couple of people through Instagram, some people through Maribel. A lot of you I do know. I've been practicing meditation, forms of meditation, since I was in my late 20s. I came into a deep yoga practice around 2013. Prior to that, I practiced sort of superficially. But around that time, I had a series of panic and anxiety attacks that debilitated me. And that for a period of months, I really had a hard time leaving my house. And so what I turned to was what I was slightly familiar with, which was yoga, not knowing that it could help me. And sure enough, it did. And over a period of months, I was able to come back into a state of less anxiety and fewer panic attacks. They didn't disappear completely, but they did lessen. And over time, I was able to sort of work with them and eventually befriend them in such a way that they've really stayed off. I haven't had a panic attack or anxiety attack in a long time. And sometimes I find myself getting close or getting to that point where something's happening and I'm able to sort of step back into a state of sort of more at ease and more groundedness. My yoga practice was going really well, and I was very thrilled with that practice. It was a meditative, but also very physical practice. And in 2018, I had a bicycle accident where I shattered my elbow. And I spent 8 days in the hospital. I had 2 surgeries and lost mobility in my right arm. Experienced tremendous nerve pain due to damage to the ulnar nerve. And I found myself not practicing my yoga physically the way I was used to, and suffered as a result, sort of felt the loss. That led me to sort of a greater understanding of the importance of meditation, meditation without the movement practice. And so that led me ultimately to mindfulness meditation and to embracing the mindfulness practice, not so much as an add-on to my yoga practice, but actually as a primary practice that I do on a daily basis and that I develop. And so that's how I came into mindfulness practice, through like this long winding path that led me here. This practice has been around for thousands of years. It was developed by the Buddha 2,500 years ago. And over that time span, people have really fine-tuned the practice in terms of how it is done, how it is taught. And there's a lot of knowledge on that practice itself. The practice that I have learned over the years and that I've been trained to share with you is a secular practice, meaning it is not a Buddhist practice. It is not based on the Buddhist religion. It doesn't have any basis other than, I mean, it does have a basis on Buddhism, but it's not taught from a Buddhist perspective. It is taught completely from an inquiry-based perspective without any of the trappings of the language of Buddhism as much as possible. So I want to point that out just in case for those of you who may have a spiritual tradition other than Buddhism, that this is a neutral practice and a secular practice meant to support everyone wherever they are in their journey and in their path. So what is mindfulness meditation? So mindfulness meditation is a simple practice. It is very simple, but it is actually difficult to do, right? Simple to understand, but difficult to execute, right? And so mindfulness meditation is a combination of two things. It is a combination of a focused practice, which the language in Sanskrit would be shamatha. And shamatha is a concentration practice. And the other element of mindfulness is an awareness practice, which the language for it would be vipassana. And so it is a combination of shamatha and vipassana, focus and awareness at the same time. So it is not just a focus practice that you would, let's say, just focus solely on the breath. And it's not just an awareness practice where you would scan your body, but it's actually a twofold practice that you hold with a larger kind of proportion going to the focus rather than to the awareness. So the balance depends, but it's more around like 70% focus on the breath and 30% awareness of your environment. It is not a trance practice, meaning you're not trying to evade or trying to get out of your circumstances. Instead, you're going into where you are, as you are, the way you are, right? So it is a practice of the moment without pushing away anything, right? So again, a focus and an awareness practice at the same time. And so I'm gonna pause right there. And what I wanna do is right away introduce you to the practice, because more so than a cognitive sharing that we could do, this is a practice that is literally a practice, meaning you need to experience it. So I wanna see if we could settle in for 5 minutes of a sit practice, and then we'll come back and pick up on this notion of what is mindfulness meditation and how we could unpack that a little bit for today. So with that, I'm going to give you the very, very simple instructions. They're like so simple of mindfulness meditation. Take your seat. So taking your seat means take a comfortable seat where you're not leaning back, but you're actually towards the edge of your seat. And so let me bring my computer a little bit more this way, and you'll see where I am sitting. So I'm on a stool, and this stool is a little bit high for me, but you'll notice that my feet are actually on the ground, but my knees are leaning up, they're below my hips. So my knees are not like this, right? This would be above the hips. This is going to be below the hips. This allows you to move or hinge at the hips. And this allows you to also take an upright back. You don't want to have back support because, as I said, this is a very much an awareness practice. And the tendency is that when you get into the mindfulness practice, you start relaxing. And if you are on your bed, you're going to eventually fall asleep. So this is not a going to sleep practice, it's a waking up practice. So you want a straight back. So notice that my back is not hunched. It's not really back like this up tight, right? So it's actually a neutral back. That neutral back will allow you to relax and also to expand the lung cavity so that your breathing could be unobstructed. Your hands are going to go face down on your knees, and you're going to relax your shoulders, right? So this may mean that you might move your hands a little bit back or a little bit forward, but just feel the relaxation in your shoulders. As you do that, we're going to bring our chin just slightly down. And as you bring your chin slightly down, you're going to look ahead of you down with your gaze lowered. So it's a lowered gaze, eyes open. So lowered gaze, but eyes open. We're taking in the visual field. We're not closing off from the visual field. Again, 70% attention, focus on the breath. The 30% is awareness of everything that's going on around you. And so from there, we start beginning the shamatha part of the meditation, right? Which is the focus on the breath. So we start noticing the inhale and the exhale. Now, how can we facilitate that? So it's difficult if you're not used to practicing, especially by yourself. How do you focus on the breath? So you work on focusing on the physicality of your breathing. And so you could notice, for instance, the belly going out on the inhale, the belly going in on the exhale. You could connect that to the feeling of the temperature of the air, the coolness of the air on the inhale, the warmth of the breath on the exhale. So you could have two ways of anchoring to the breath, the movement of the belly, the coolness of the air, the warmth of the breath. Now, we train our focus on the breath. And that's what training the focus on the breath means. There's actually a physical manifestation of that. It's not metaphorical. And now when we do that, within a very short period of time, for me, a second sometimes, the focus will drift to my thinking. And we could think of our thoughts as a very fast moving stream that does never stop. We cannot stop our thoughts. We are not going to aim to stop our thinking. We are going to allow that river to flow because we can't dam it. And damming it would not make any sense anyway. It would cut us off from our humanity, right? So this is not about cutting anything off. It's not about rejecting anything, but it's about working with whatever is. So when the focus drifts into the thinking stream or the thinking river, and we notice, because we may not notice for a while. And you might be, let's say that you're meditating for 20 minutes and you might spend 7 minutes in your thoughts without you realizing that you had a conversation, you fixed all the world's problems, you had an argument, and you thought about food, right? All in 7 minutes, and you go like, oh my God. And then when you notice, that's the awareness part, that's the vipassana part. When you notice that you're in that thinking mode, you don't push. Instead, you label, and you label it thinking, simply thinking. Not good thought, not bad thought, just neutral thinking. And what we are doing is that we are treating our thoughts as simply thoughts. They have no reference in the sense of no weight in this practice. So we are not saying this thought is good, that thought is bad. We're taking a non-judgmental approach to whatever happens when we find ourselves in that stream. And we practice that non-judgmental approach by the labeling and the using of the word thinking. And very gently, but very precisely, return back to the focus on the breath, the focus on the inhale and on the exhale. And then how many times will we do that? A lot of times, many times, thousands of times sometimes. But you're not going to be counting, because that would be, again, kind of going into the thinking mode. When we finish the meditation practice and you realize, oh my God, I spent, you know, a long time thinking, I think, you know, you realize there was a lot of thinking going on. That's not a bad practice. It's also not a good practice. It's just a practice. And so we train on not qualifying the practice as good or bad, the thoughts as good or bad. We just keep coming back simply without judgment to the practice and do it constantly. That's, in a nutshell, the entire mindfulness practice itself. Very simple to explain, very challenging to actually do for periods of time, and also to develop as a habit. as a habit that we do throughout our lives. So I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm just going to take a moment. And I got my trusty chimes. And I'm going to call the chime to attention. And I'll mark the time for 5 minutes. And then in 5 minutes, I'll call it back. So take your posture, meaning take your sitting position, placing your hands on your lap. Take an upright but not uptight back. Bring your chin slightly down. Take your gaze about 4 feet in front of you. Lower your eyes just a little bit. Begin to bring your attention to the sensation of the breath. And when you notice that you have drifted into thought, label it thinking, and with gentleness and kindness, return back to the focus of the breath. Here we go. So that was 5 minutes of mindfulness sitting practice. Move my chair a little closer. So I wanted to just open it up and maybe just take 5 minutes to talk a little bit about what you're thinking now that you've done this little sample meditation and that you've heard my introduction. What's going on with you and your mind, and what questions might you have? So when you go ahead and start, just say your name and go for your question or your observation or comment.
Carlos, I think for me, it was just how much my mind does drift. It seemed to be constant. Then I was thinking, am I thinking of breathing? Is that thinking or is that breathing?
Yes. So that's Patsy, that's a really good observation. And what happens when you're doing this for 5 minutes is that you're settling in. And so it's not a really long enough time for you to really, you know, deep into yourself and to unwind a bit. I find that the first 7 minutes of a 20-minute sit is usually the mind going, blah, 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 blah. So you want, like, the minimum dose really is 20 minutes, because it'll give you the experience of getting little glimpses of that moment where you're right there in the moment, right? And you'll sense it. The minute you sense it and you notice it, you're kind of like thinking, so you're kind of out of it. So it's a very subtle experience, but within that a short 5 minute sit, you're not going to have, your mind's going to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Within a longer sit, it depends on what's going on in your life. So if you're under a stressful situation and you have a lot of thoughts, those thoughts are going to keep going as fast as they're going before. And so you can't expect yourself to be at that moment of like what people like think of the monk in the Himalayan mountains in a cave somewhere, that happens after 30 years. It doesn't happen after 15 minutes, you know? So those are expectations that we often have, that we want that instant sense of it. And we go, no, we gotta work the ground. So we want to cultivate, which is one of the things, like one of the key words that actually we could come back to meditation, that meditation is a form of cultivating both heart and mind. And we want to till the ground so that we could have a conducive environment for us to be stable. So this is a very much a stabilizing practice, but it takes time for someone to get that sense of the stability. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. ¿Quién más? Who else wants to make a comment or ask a question?
Carlos, this is Susan. I'm so grateful for this class. I appreciated the metaphor of the stream. And of course, the wandering mind processing the day. I was grateful to have the stream to toss all that stuff into. I usually have a path, and it's an action versus a passive, say, watching. My usual focus is a path, but it requires, you know, walking and walking and plodding and plodding and plodding. So thank you for that stream. And as always, metaphors sometimes don't always work. So would you have another, a change up, a switch up from the stream?
Well, you know, I would say, first of all, there's a practice that's mindfulness too. It's walking meditation practice. So we could, there's a parallel practice that is a mindfulness base, but is actually not on the breath. It's more on the sensation of the feet touching the ground. And that would be walking meditation. The metaphor that comes, there are lots of metaphors. I don't really play sports, except that I've now learned that I could play pickleball. I learned that in Thanksgiving. But thinking of, let's say, like tennis and Maribel plays tennis, I think that, and again, I may be like totally butchering the metaphor, but I would think that if you're playing doubles, your focus is on the ball. So you keep your focus on the ball, but you are aware of your partner and you're also aware of your opponent. So simultaneously, you're keeping the focus on the ball, the awareness on the partner and the opponent, and the cheering crowd or the booing crowd would be your thoughts. And so if you allow yourself to drift into whatever the crowd is doing or saying at the moment, your eyes are off the ball, off your partner, off the opponent, and you're off your game in that regard. So from a sports perspective, I don't know if that works, but that would be another approach of how to balance where this practice is a balancing practice of those two things, focus and awareness, and allowing that to hold in a spacious place of non-judgment, meaning that when you do go off balance and you go and you look at the crowd, or you go swimming in the stream and you really go, oh my God, the water feels so good. And then you've like swam for like 50 miles. You go like, oh, okay. And then you just come back. No big deal. This is the human condition. So a lot of times, you know, people believe that suffering is a curse or that suffering is a punishment, but suffering is about living, right? So suffering is normal. It is part of being a human being and being a mammal and having a nervous system. That's not a curse. It's not a punishment. It is. And so when we do suffer, when we feel whatever emotions we might be feeling, fear, anxiety, panic, you know, all the things that I experienced, you know, those are normal within the human condition. And so the idea is, can we work with those parts of ourselves that are often challenging and bring it back into a sense of befriending, which is what the practice is also about. It's about befriending ourselves completely, radically, 100%, without if, ands, or buts, just as we are. So if I'm panicky and I'm anxious, that's what I'm experiencing right now. And I'm just going to notice it and come back to my breath. So anyway, yeah. Who else wants to jump in?
I had a question. Lisa.
Oh, Lisa.
I wanted to shut my eyes. Why opening actually staring at the wall, it was kind of making me a little dizzy. So is there, you know, shutting your eyes or not shutting your eyes? I'm not going to get sleepy if I'm standing up. I mean, if I'm sitting up. So what do you say about that?
So, I mean, there's meditation practices where you do close your eyes. This one in particular, you don't. So it's not like it's wrong or right. This one is just a practice. It's kind of like a drill. Again, going back to a sports metaphor, if you're playing basketball, you're going to do different drills. This drill is about eyes open. There's a reason for it. So you don't want to look straight ahead. So you don't want to like look ahead of you. You want to lower your chin so that you're looking slightly down. And then you want to lower the eyes, the gaze, so that you're not taking in everything in sharp focus. It's very soft looking. Now, why is that? Because part of the training is that you're not pushing anything away. You're not pushing what you're seeing. You're not pushing away what you're hearing. You're not pushing away what you're smelling. You're not pushing away what you're tasting. You're not pushing away any of your senses, including your visual field. And that training is important because we would say that there is the meditation practice and then there is the post-meditation practice. The post meditation is what you do when you're not sitting. And so you can take this attitude of befriending, of noticing, of being in the present moment when you step out of your meditation cushion or seat or chair, because you're training to stay fully present and awake just as things are, not how you would want them to be, not how you would wish them to be, how you would visualize them to be differently, just as they are right now, this very moment. So it's a training mechanism for continuing to take that attitude of cultivation throughout your day, which is wouldn't be the formal meditation practice. One more, and then we'll switch. Anybody else? Go for it, Claudia.
I couldn't help but notice the rain getting stronger and less strong by the window I'm sitting near. And I would hear it and know it was there and then try not to hear it anymore. And then the wind would blow. But that's what, at least I recognized, I thought that, okay, it's just rain, and moved ahead or tried to come back to where I was supposed to be.
Yeah, so it's a fine kind of line of, you may notice the rain, and again, 70% of your attention is on the breath, that 30% is on the awareness of how you are, where you are. Mm-hmm. So, but if you find that you're catching yourself thinking about the rain, that moment, it's just, you label it thinking. Mm-hmm. Don't struggle with it, thinking.
Yeah, I kept saying that word, but yeah, kept thinking rain.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with saying it a bunch of times.
Okay. All right.
Okay, we're going to pause there. And so I want to just rewind a little bit of what we've been talking about and then share my screen and show you some of the resources that we have for this week and some of the things that I want you to do. So I want to say that this is a freedom practice. I've been teaching at a men's prison and at a women's prison now for since 2019. And I've been teaching yoga, and lately I've been doing more of the meditation. And I realized that this is a way to show people how to walk through the prison doors, even though the prison doors are closed. It's a liberation practice. I've been teaching a semester at Miami-Dade, and we're reading a book that was written by students at the prisons called Hear Us. And what I tell the students is that we're practicing because they're doing meditation as well. And I said, this is a freedom practice. This class is focusing on the idea of freedom from the lens of the incarcerated. And they were like, oh, that's so interesting. And then I waited a little bit, like another day or two, and I said, and in fact, the incarcerated are not necessarily those people who are in prison. The incarcerated are ourselves. We are incarcerated. We are incarcerated by our own judgments, by our own filters, by our own fears, by our own sort of limitations that we impose because of our false beliefs. And so all of that is a form of incarceration. And so when we think of how is it that we could walk out of the prison doors? How is it that we could step out? Because the prison doors for us are actually open. It's the doors open. I think of the story of Mohini, the tiger who lived in the Washington Zoo. And the story goes that Mohini lived in a very, very small cell for a very long time, years upon years upon years before the zoo was redeveloped. And then they came up with a larger space for Mohini that was much more natural looking and very large. When Mohini was let out from the enclosure, Mohini stepped out of the enclosure and stayed within the same frame and walked 10 feet this way and 10 feet that way. Mohini could not stop the process of the incarceration that it had experienced in the cell that it was in for those years. And I think of Mohini as that metaphor for ourselves, that we, for such a long period of time, have lived in the prison cell of our minds. And I think back of Bob Marley, right? And his redemption song. And he says, You know, emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but yourselves can free your mind, right? Bob Marley, the poet, the prophet, the singer, the Rasta man, quite knew that the freedom and the liberation was not going to come from an outside source. It was going to come from ourselves. We ourselves have to step out. That means that we have to put some effort. It means that we have to put some intention. And this is where the practice becomes important, right? We can go at this and treat it as a belief. It is not a belief. It is something that you could verify for yourself, but that you have to do. You have to do it. Again, it's like working out and building muscles. You can't think about building muscles. You have to lift some heavy weights to do the building of the muscle. You can't think about your own freedom and your own liberation unless you take the steps to do that and find a method in getting there. And this is where the cultivation becomes important. This is where the non-judgmental attitude becomes important, that we are not imposing on ourselves some kind of like good or bad, but instead we're saying, I'm going to work with myself in gentleness, but I am going to work with myself. I am going to put some effort and I'm going to put some intention and I'm just going to keep observing. I'm not going to push anything away and I'm not going to bring anything in. I'm going to keep it as light as I can, as light as I can. And so this is the intent for the 6 weeks. My intent is that in these 6 weeks that we are together, you follow what I'm asking you to do. You follow it as best you can, knowing that at times you won't be able to or you won't want to. That's okay. But that you make a strong commitment to practice meditation, that this is not a cognitive sort of thing that we're learning here and we're going to think about it. No, we're going to learn about it, but we're going to do it. We're going to do it. And so part of what we want to do is rev up this notion of excitement about the practice itself. This is important on the start, because as we start, we will hit like walls of like, what the heck am I doing? This is so boring. This is not working. This is crazy. You're going to get a whole bunch of resistance coming through, but you want to start with some motivation because that's going to get you started forward moving, right? I'm going to talk a little bit about joy in a moment, because the other thing that we want to do is we want to stir joy. This is a joyful practice. Hani Lu Hamer, the civil rights activist from the 60s, in the 60s, she was a sharecropper in Mississippi, said, make a joyful noise as we work on this thing of freedom, right? Freedom and joy go hand in hand. You cannot be working on your own liberation and be beating yourself up. You can't be working on your own liberation and the liberation of others with a dour face. There has to be a sense of happiness in this practice, because otherwise we can't do it. And that sense of joy and happiness is part of the ecosystem, sort of that cultivation that we want to generate to allow the meditation practice to evolve and to develop and to bear fruit. So from there, I'm going to jump and share my screen. All right, and can you see my screen right now? See? Patsy, can you see it?
Yes.
Yes, okay, good. All right, so these are the things that I asked you to do. Complete the questionnaire. I think most of you did that. Get the book, When Things Fall Apart. This is a great book. It is written from a Buddhist nun's perspective. It's Buddhist teaching on mindfulness. And if the Buddhist terminology kind of freaks you out or turns you off, translate it, right? But it is quite good. And I love her straightforwardness in the text. You've registered for the Zoom room. Sign up for the Telegram group chat. Telegram is like WhatsApp. What you would do is go to your phone and download the Telegram app. Download the Telegram app. It's a free app. I didn't want to use WhatsApp in part because most of you have maybe WhatsApp, or maybe you don't. This is a non-Facebook application. I don't have Facebook. And you have some privacy sort of filters that are better than WhatsApp, but you're not going to get swamped with other things. This is probably the only thing that you're going to have in Telegram, the mindfulness class. So sign up for that and then come back to this link and click on it, and you're going to be taken to your group. If you need help with that, I will help you get there. You just need to call me and I'll give you my number before we leave. Actually, I text it just about everybody. So you could ask me for help. So week one, here we go. Click on this link. So notice that I just click on the link and it takes you to the page for week one. Now, all of these pages are password protected with the word heart, H-E-A-R-T, lowercase. Here's a little bit of an intro. Here's the list. And it looks like a really long list. I'm intense. So you've entered my class, right? So if you're my students, you're going to like go, oh my God, he's crazy. But I'm not, it's not that much. So first of all, set a calendar reminder for you to meditate. Be serious about this. Put a calendar reminder on your phone, on your, whatever works for you, that you remind yourself to meditate at least 5 times a week, 5 times for these 6 weeks. My preferred time is the morning. So I meditate in the morning before my day gets really busy. That helps me a lot. You're aiming for 20 minutes a day. I explained why the 20 minutes a little bit earlier. 5 minutes is too short because your mind is still like spinning. And 20 minutes, it's when you begin to kind of settle in a little bit. Try it. Aim for that 20 minutes. If you can't get 20 minutes, don't freak out. Again, non-judgment, but you want intention and you want a little bit of muscle here. You want to push. All right. Jot down each time you meditate in your notebook, not like how you felt about the meditation, but the fact that you meditated. So this is my jotting down of my meditation. Let me find it. All right, very simple. I meditated today. I haven't written it down. So there's my meditation. I bought a brand new, I love this technology, composition notebook. It's my favorite. So this is what I keep for the semester. I just put everything in there. It's disposable. At the end, if I may like some things that I write, I may not. It's like, it's all right. It's a comp notebook, right? So this is where I record a lot of things, but I record when I meditate. If you don't write it down, you're not going to keep yourself accountable. This is so important. Write the thing down. Aim for 5 days a week, 20 minutes. Read from when things fall apart. Do so slowly. Don't speed read the book. Go at it sort of like slowly and meditatively. Don't worry how far you get. Maybe you get beyond the first chapter. That's great. But maybe not. That's great too. Now, contemplate the questions I posed regarding the reading. These are found in the PDF below. So I'll show you the PDF file in a moment. Aim to write your Blue Zones journaling entry at least 5 times a week. That Blue Zones journaling, I will explain in the PDF as well. I'll show you what I mean by the Blue Zones journaling. Join the Telegram group chat, which I explained already, start posting questions. If you have any questions that come up, post them there. This is the link to the group. Again, first download the app, then click on the link. On Friday, so every Friday for the next 6 weeks, let the group know how you're doing with your practice. Do a short check-in via Telegram. You can post a comment, or better still, record a little round video. You're saying, I don't know how to do a round video. Don't worry, then just type it in, but have fun with it. Again, joy is a very part of the process. The point of this is to keep you and me and all of us accountable while staying free of a judgmental attitude or stance. If you missed a bunch of days or even all of the days, let's say that from here to the next week, you didn't do shit, right? You just didn't do anything. If you missed all those days, don't worry about it. Check in anyway. This is not about judgment. It's about observing what's there. and keeping ourselves moving forward. If you're available to join me for a 20-minute meditation practice on Friday, I'll be doing so every Friday for the next 6 weeks, starting this Friday. So Friday at 7, I will be in this room and I will sit for 20 minutes. I will turn on my camera. This is the Zoom link. And you could join me for a 20-minute sit on Friday, every Friday. So that's another way of extending sort of the commitment that you're making to this practice and to yourself. All right, so these are the 8 things that I'm asking you to do for this week. And now I'm just going to move down a little bit and talk a little bit about this resource. So this is a PDF. If you scroll all the way down, you could download the PDF, which would be the easiest way to read it. But these are notes from the class. These are not actual notes, but these are sort of themes that may have popped up in the class. I may not have said these things, but I have pointed to them or actually said them themselves. These are slides, by the way. So basic teaching, everything is happening within our mind, which is really what's happening right now. You're filtering everything to your mind and you're understanding that what is happening in your mind is that fast moving stream. All right. So if you scroll down, there's like 20 slides with just like a pithy, very short sort of statement. We are the challenge. The challenge is not somewhere else. The challenge is not like Donald Trump, or the challenge is not like Biden, or the challenge is not something out there. We are the challenge. We come back and we keep scrolling down. And I want to point out So here are the highlights and questions from the introduction and chapter 1 of When Things Fall Apart. So notice that when I said, look at the questions. So on the right side of this page, you'll see that these are actual quotes from the intro and chapter 1. On the left side of the page, these are reflection questions. You could answer them in your notebook. Don't answer them like you would an essay question. Answer them as a journaling question, as a sort of like brainstorming question, as a very sort of loosely held question, right? And you could ignore them or you could use them. The idea here is that now we're engaging cognition, right? We are engaging the mind, the thoughts, and cultivating that, because we're not throwing away our mind. We're actually engaging the mind and starting to shape it so that there is a conducive environment for us to have a greater possibility to have stability. And ultimately, what we're developing out of this practice, this is not a practice just about stress reduction. That is actually, that's a nice outgrowth of it. This is a practice about wisdom. This is a practice about liberation. And this is a practice about radical compassion. Right. So this is so much more than the physical manifestations of the practice. Ultimately, we're looking at our freedom and the freedom of everybody around us and everything around us. All right. So Blue Zones journaling. This is the reference that I made. So it's in the PDF. So if you go to this page, you'll see that this comes from a book called The Blue Zones Challenge. It's a great little textbook or book. And in this book, there's a little practice that I liked a lot. It's a journaling listing practice. 3 wins for the day, lessons from today, and gratitude. So this is a list. You would write this in your notebook, right? And this is my list from January the 3rd, the 3 wins today. I meditated. I finished planning for my classes at Miami-Dade. I revamped my yoga page. Lessons from today. I don't need to hold on to heavy emotional loads. I can place these down and feel light. Doing so is important. I can forget and will hold on when I don't need to. Or on the other hand, holding weight for periods of time also provides for opportunities to strengthen. And you may be saying, I don't understand what he's saying. You don't need to, because I didn't write it for you. I wrote it for me. I know what I'm saying there. And it's clear to me because it was in my own kind of like shorthand, right? So none of this writing is for anybody else other than for you. Finally, there's the list of gratitude. So on that day, I chatted with Juice in the morning. I didn't chat with Orange Juice. I chatted with Hugo Sanchez, who's here, who's my nephew. And I chatted with him in the morning and it brought me great pleasure. I was grateful for being home. I was grateful for eating lunch together with my baby mama. That's my wife. I was grateful for chatting with Chuchu, my daughter. I was grateful for yoga practice. I was grateful for chatting with my sister, who's here too. And I was grateful for remembering my mom on her birthday and who she had passed some years ago, and just for her care and love. I ended the day with this last sentence. I went to sleep cultivating joy. And so this is a joyful cultivation practice, a joyful cultivation practice, because this opens up the heart. And as such, it opens up the space for us to have more possibility, more creativity, more energy, right? And it allows us to work with ourselves a little bit better. If you scroll down just a little bit more, this is an article that is on cool boredom. Cool boredom. There's this term called cool boredom and hot boredom. Cool boredom and hot boredom. Hot boredom is often what we feel when we're meditating, which means that we want things to be different. That's hot boredom. Cool boredom is when we go like, ah, I'm just drinking my coffee. I'm just living my life. It's the way it is. And I'm okay with that. And you settle in. Read the article. It's quite good. And again, what are we doing here? We're feeding the mind. Feeding the mind. Okay, I'm going to stop the share. And I have said like a giant mouthful of like lots of things. All of that is on that page. But hey, do you want to ask me something right now? I hope I didn't confuse you terribly or overwhelmed you. This is all about joy. So you can't get this wrong. So go ahead and ask. We have maybe like 2 minutes to go.
How are Maribel and your sister?
Oh my gosh, they're here. They're like, I think they're on a screen somewhere. They're good. They're doing well. Everybody
give them virtual hugs.
I will, Susan. The same for you and your family. Yeah. Hey, I'm excited. I don't know if you hear it in my voice. I really believe that these 6 weeks can be like an amazing experience for you of just of openness, right? And of a shift, a beginning of a shift that I think will feed for the rest of 2022. This is a fantastic way to start this year, not because we want things to be, you know, again, we're not pushing anything away. We're just opening up ourselves and saying, damn, I'm good. I'm happy. I'm all right. And I'm going to embrace my life as messy as it is. And I have capacity. I have capacity to deal with whatever shit comes my way this year. I can handle it. I know that's part of my stream. I know that I could be point focusing and I could come back to my practice and ground myself. But let me finish off with one last thing. And this is something that I've learned from the prison work. And I learned it from Angela Davis and reading her work. And she says, freedom is not an individual thing. It is not an individualistic thing, meaning we cannot be free by ourselves. You always are free in relationship to the other, meaning we cannot work on our liberation without the liberation of all people and all beings. If one person is not free, we're not completely free. And so as we work with our freedom, this is not a pet project of Carlos. This is why this class exists. and is to share it out with you and with others. We want full liberation for all people and ourselves right now. And we do that in community. And so this practice is not an individual practice only. Obviously, you practice it on your own, but this gets magnified and intensified by practicing with others. And so this is the invitation to Friday. This is the invitation to use that chat to become visible, as messy as that might be. Do it. Commit to it. With that, we're done for today. I hope that you had a good experience.
It was wonderful, Carlos. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much. Ask questions in that chat, and I'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good night. Practice.
Thank you, Carlos.
You're welcome. Adios.
Thank you.
Adios.
Thank you.
Susan, I love you.
Love you, buddy. Oh, so good to see your sweet face.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh.
I found out about your class at like 2 this morning. And oh, I'm so glad I'm here.
That's incredible. How did you find out?
Insomnia brought me to your pulse.
Nice. Well, I'm not nice about the insomnia. I'm glad that you're here.
Yes, it's part of it all.
Yeah.
Love you. See you Friday.
Take care, Susan. All right. Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My sis. Oh, wait, it's on mute. Wait, unmute yourself.
That I got all messed up to enter because I kept putting heart.
I should have put the same password. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Then my phone, I got a new phone and all my things were transferred, but somehow the Zoom app had to be reloaded. So I went anyway. I was a little late. I'm so sorry because I was actually early. Next time I'm going to be 20 minutes early.
There you go.
But thank you so much. That's good. I mean, it's really organized. I like that because I like being able to like have a list of things that I'm a list person.
It really does help a lot.
It helps me feel like I could do a guidance and to make sure that I'm getting the most out of the class.
Yeah. And that's what I want. I want people to leave with a sense like, you know what, this has substance. And it's like, and they committed to it and they're going to get something out of it. If they do all these things, they're going to
Absolutely.
I mean,
I really feel like I had a head start from taking the other class. Yeah. I really like the story of the tiger. That's like, wow. I never heard that. That was like really cool.
Yeah.
Cause it really makes sense. I think that happens to a lot of us.
It happens to all of us. We're all conditioned, and we all end up being trapped in our minds. And then the question is like, well, this is a great opportunity to see how we could unwind that conditioning and see if we could take some steps outside of that sort of enclosure. And, we can't take the steps for other people. We could only take the steps for ourselves. And that's where Bob Marley was so right. It's like, only, like he said, emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. Only you can, free yourself, So it's like that freedom, like nobody rescues you from that. That's you. It's you. And then the idea is that a lot of times people lack like the tools. So tools are so important, to be able to work with ourselves. And this is a tool. This is like a powerful tool to work with our mind and to work with ourselves and to decondition ourselves from the things that restrict us, and it's going back to like the physical training, or physical therapy, when you've had an accident and you have your range of motion is limited. You now have to train to undo that binding so that you can extend, so that you can move. And that takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, or finding alternative ways to free yourself so that you could do what you used to do.
But it's not magical. It's not like, oh, you know, it's going to come from the sky. It's like, no, it's like it's going to come from you, you know, thinking about it and being intelligent and then doing the best you can.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm very grateful for that, for having been able to do that. So
I'm glad.
Because, I mean, not everybody has the ability to have the tools, and a lot of people are afraid to even.
Oh, my God. No, we're so privileged. We're so privileged that we have access and that we have a desire. That's it. And, you know, this doesn't mean that we're going to, like, you know, free ourselves completely. I don't think that's even possible. I think that's an ongoing process. It's a constant process of liberation, of like freeing ourselves for now. And then as we walk into the next space, we realize, oh, it became small. And so we walk into the other one, which becomes bigger, but it's still small. It's like we're constantly opening the door. And that's hopefully what we do until we take our last breath. And when we take our last breath, we finally walk through, you know, instead of, you know, walking through to that expansiveness and doing that last breath with the joy of knowing that that's what we're doing. It's not like a limitation. It's actually a full liberation.
Awesome. That's really beautiful. Mm. All that PDF and all that is on the email that you
sent. It's in the link to the website.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. On the page. All right.
You need help.
All right, my brother.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Get some rest.
Have a good day.
Love you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.